Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Jose Ramirez lifts one high in the air. Deep left field. Liriano back. He's out of room. That's out of here. Seven. And he might have just hit another one. Deep left field. Gone to Souvenir City. Jose Ramirez with his second home run of the game. Ripped the third. On his way to third and a rundown. The 1-2. Swung out and miss. He struck him out to end the game. And the Indians have run their win streak to 13 in a row.
Talking to people around baseball, they believe the Indians are still the best team in the American League, top to bottom. The Astros getting Justin Verlander absolutely notches them up a little bit. But the Indians are hard charging, and one of the biggest reasons is they've got that rotation. But the biggest thing the Indians have going for them, aside from that offense, is the best bullpen in all of baseball.
They've won 13 games in a row, consecutive seasons now, and everything is really, you know, falling in place now for the Indians, especially offensively, especially with the way Ramirez is swinging, and they're going to get Michael Brantley back for the playoffs.
The front office went out and loaded up the team, and this is their window for winning. The only question we have about this team is about Andrew Miller, whether or not he's going to be okay for the postseason. From what I understand, they basically have shut him down, trying to rest him up and hoping that as they ramp him back up, that knee will hold up enough for him to be effective in the postseason. Besides that, I think right now the Indians are the best team in baseball.
It is Justin Verlander Day, making his debut with the Houston Astros. Swing and a miss. Yeah. Strike three call. How about that from Verlander? He finishes the night at 99 miles an hour, just above the knees.
The closest thing I can compare it to is opening day. Kind of nerves, the unknown, don't really want to let everybody down. New team, but these guys have made the process pretty easy on me. Was really hoping I had 100 there, but didn't quite get it. Honestly, just a good kind of ending to the night. This is how you win tight ball games.
These two sides are still fighting over where this case should be heard. The NFL, presumably last night, filed something that said this should be heard in New York. Meanwhile, they've got to deal with this Texas thing the NFLPA filed. The big thing is, if a TRO is granted, he plays. Elliott plays until the case is heard, and that could be weeks, if not months. If his temporary restraining order is denied, he sits, he gets suspended, he has to sit on the sidelines, and then that still same process generally still holds. Just like the NFL is going to make the Brady argument all over whatever court they're going to be in, hey, there's already precedent out there, this shouldn't even be a case, it shouldn't even be in federal court. The NFLPA is going to argue about inconsistency. When they gave Josh Brown a one-game suspension, I thought that was the biggest mistake they made in this policy. Here you have somebody who presumably they knew admitted to abuse. And again, we're calling this a zero-tolerance policy. Do it once, even for a second, you should be out six games. They gave him one game. Here you have Ezekiel Elliott, and he doesn't get afforded those same circumstances in a case where it seems like the story is inconsistent. That's the problem. The consistency is going to be the thing the Players Association will harp on.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome to the extravaganza, indeed. What's going on? Thanks for joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo sports leader. Yeah, we have got a lot of stuff packed into this two-hour show today. A good montage there together, as always, by Jim Cushlin. A little Indians. How about it? 13 straight W's. They may indeed be, as Pedro Gomez and a host of others say, they may indeed be the very best team in all of baseball right now. Now, does that mean they are better than the Dodgers when the Dodgers are at full strength? Not necessarily. It doesn't mean that at all yet. But boy, oh boy, nobody has played better baseball more consistently in the second half of the season, obviously, than the Cleveland Indians have. So what does that mean going forward? Are they going to beat the Astros that have now been, as you just heard in some of the commentary, nudged up, if you will, by the acquisition of former Tiger Justin Verlander, who made his first start last night count for the Astros. Kush, what did he go? Six innings, gave up just one run, I think, struck out seven, didn't walk a batter.
Yeah, he went six innings in this one. I think it was more like nine strikeouts.
But, was it nine?
Yeah, but what was interesting is the Seattle guy was, despite giving up a run, was throwing a no-hitter through six. That was what was really funny about that for a time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they're going to be very, it was a great pitching duel. Good for them. Great to see. And good for Justin Verlander. I mean, it's weird. This is one of those weird things for me, you know, Kush, when it comes to the, and by the way, we're going to get into Ezekiel Elliott. You heard that. We're going to get into Isaiah Thomas, whose hip injury, by the way, may be far, 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 far worse than anybody is talking about. New reports say it's the kind of thing, looking at other athletes who have had it in the past, that could be career-threatening. Career-threatening. But at least Dan Gilbert got that second-round draft pick in 2020. That'll make it worthwhile. I mean, seriously, it's a big deal. We'll get into that and so much more coming up. But staying on baseball for a minute, and we're going to get into a lot more baseball with Zach Meisel, who covers the Indians for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, to talk about the hottest team and maybe the best team in baseball. Coming up at about 3:35, but just briefly, Jim, this is one of those weird feelings for me. I, you know, like Justin Verlander, I have always had a deep amount of respect for Justin Verlander. No, I was right, by the way, seven strikeouts.
Don't
ever argue with
six
me.
Six innings, a run on seven, six hits, that. Walk, seven strikeouts.
Yeah, there you go. Although I did say without a walk, there was one walk, so a little bit off there. But anyway, I like Justin, you know? It's kind of hard not to. He has been a class guy. He has been a tremendously successful guy, MVP, Cy Young Award in the same season, just been a dominant fixture in the All-Star game and dominant fixture at the top of every statistic over the course of the last 10-plus years. He's been the face of the Tigers, arguably, along with Miguel Cabrera, in the last 5-6 years. Maybe the face of it his entire career in Detroit. It's hard not to like Justin Verlander, and I want to see him be successful, and I want to see him, you know, get a chance to win a World Series. That's one of the things he talked about, and we talked about this with a couple of our Tigers reporters that we discuss baseball with, you know, that he's got some things that he wants to accomplish before his career is over. And obviously that would be playing in the World Series and winning a World Series. And I want to see him have a chance to do that. So I was glad to see him dominate and win last night in that, you know, he was very, very sharp. You know, a lot of people gave him up for dead year before last. Last year, he comes out and has just a tremendous year, as a lot of people kind of were burying him, had a tremendous year, could have and maybe arguably should have won the Cy Young in the American League for the Tigers. This year, you know, he starts out, has a couple of bad outings. He gets rocked by the Indians seemingly every time he faces them anymore, but that, you know, that was skewing for the first month and a half or so of his season, as you well recall. He was dominating against everybody else, but getting shelled by the Indians. But all told now, you know, 5+ months in, he's 11-8 with a 3.74 ERA. He's still one of the better starters in baseball. And I was glad to see him go out there and be very sharp last night and do his thing to the tune that we just said of six innings and one run allowed with seven strikeouts. But he's pitching for a team that I, by my very rooting nature, have to root against because I don't want the Astros to win the World Series. They would have to beat my Indians in order to do that. I don't want Justin Verlander to win a World Series. Now he would have to beat my Indians, who are arguably a better team and maybe the best team, as we talked about a moment ago, right now playing in the American League, if not all of baseball. So it's just one of those weird things. I'm rooting for him personally, want to see him dominate. But if, you know, maybe he can leave with a lead after six, seven, or eight, and then have somebody in the Astros bullpen give up leads so that the Indians can, overtake them for the best record in the American League and clinch home field advantage throughout the playoffs, that would do me just fine. I want to see him be successful, but I want to see his team give it up. And right now it is a very, very tight race. It is just a three-game separation in the loss column for the Astros over the Indians. They are 85-53, are Houston. The Indians are 82-56, so exactly three back of the best record And if you ask me, you know, I would very much like to have games one and potentially game seven in an American League Championship Series. I would very much like to have those things happen out of Progressive Field in Cleveland.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no doubt. And at least in the interim, by my count, 4.5 over the Red Sox in case the Indians can't overtake Houston for that at least home field in that first round. So they got a 4.5 game cushion on them. And what's fascinating on that front is as we get closer and closer to the end of this month and therefore the end of the season, Boston and Houston play a four-game series to end the year at Fenway while the Indians get the White Sox.
How about that?
That could really come into play with those things.
It very well could. And by the way, if you haven't noticed also, just as we talk about the records and the best record and everything else too, it only seems like a couple of weeks ago, really before the Indians went on this latest run of 13 straight games, and they have had five different runs of five-game winning streaks or longer this season, Jim. That's major. That is, I mean, you talk about a team getting hot and riding it. They've been able to do that. But as little as a couple of weeks ago when this run started, you know, there was still a chance. We talked about we would have to look at the box scores, and what did the Twins do? What did the Royals do? You know, they weren't dead and buried yet. This was still potentially, anyway,
sure,
a competitive division. And now the 13-game winning streak has coincided with a 3-game losing streak for the Twins. Obviously, a bad run for the Royals when they swept the Royals as well and outscored them. What was it, 24-4? I think in a series. No, wait a minute. That was what they did to the Tigers. They outscored the Royals at one point 20-0 because remember the Royals had that historic streak of scoreless baseball,
which included getting a shutout sweep at the hands of the Indians.
That's right. That's right. A shutout sweep. That was 20-0. So you look at the race now, and just because it jumps out at you, it's such a big thing. You know, the Indians are 11 games up on the second place team, which is the Twins, and 13.5 up on the third place team, the Royals. And that almost, you know, matches what Houston has mm-hmm. over Los Angeles, which is a 13.5 game lead in the West. So,
and speaking of a loss,
just quietly crept up there to have not just the best record in their division, but one of the best records in baseball and one of the yep. largest leads in all of baseball as well.
Yeah, well, one of the largest leads you mentioned to Los Angeles. I'll even turn for a random comparison's sake to the other Los Angeles. Now, granted, they're the Dodgers' second place team, the Diamondbacks, playing a lot better than the Twins, but that's actually only 11.5 right now. And how long
and
have
that's
people...
only because of the recent
right.
Cole Medina that the Dodgers have gone on.
Yep.
They have lost 9 of their last 10. They have lost 5 in a row. This was a team that just a couple of weeks ago that we were talking about, you know, just looking at the standings in the Central of the American League, we were looking at the Dodgers, and what were we asking? What were people across the country asking? Can they win 117 games?
Yep.
Can this team set the all-time wins record? Because they were just putting up crazy numbers, having crazy streaks of their own, you know, 25 out of 27 kinds of situations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember exactly what the, you know, their best run was. But the Indians have the longest winning streak in baseball this season, including those Dodgers, with 13 straight. And we'll get to this when we do the wild. You know what, Kush? Let me just do the wild stat.
All right.
Hit it because I want to talk about it a little bit more on the other side of it. Let's do the Buffalo Wild Wings wild stat of the day.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Yeah, I wanted to get this in anyway, so we'll just hit the wild stat of the day now. The Indians' 13-game winning streak would tie a franchise record. I'm sorry, if they win tonight, it'll tie the franchise record of 14, which was set just last year when they went to the World Series. This win streak now makes the Indians the second team in Major League history to have winning streaks of 13 or more games in consecutive seasons. The others, 1960 and 61 when the Yankees did it. By the way, the Yankees won the AL pennant both years and won the world title in 61. So that is your wild stat of the day. Now, Kush, I want to build on that because another one that I believe I heard, and I didn't write it down, but I was listening to Mike and Mike this morning,
mm-hmm.
and I believe that I heard was their run, the Indians' run right now, coinciding with the Diamondbacks and their 12-game streak. makes them the only two teams to have at least 12 game winning streaks simultaneously in the modern era. I don't remember the exact year, you know, going back to whatever they consider the modern era. But
usually they consider the modern era 1901 when you get American and National League, or that, unless somebody that changed something.
Check on that for me. I think I heard it in passing that by winning 12 in a row, the Indians 13 in a row, that makes them the only two teams to have at least 12 straight games won at the exact same time consecutively active in the modern era. And so, and here's another wild stat just to kind of throw that out there about the Diamondbacks. The D-backs have now gone 10 straight games without trailing a game. How about that one for a wild stat?
Wow.
They have not trailed in 10 straight games. That's the longest single-season streak in Major League history. Arizona's the fourth team to do it in the modern era. Three other teams did it in pre-1900. There you go. You mentioned 1901. Did it pre-1900, but that is an amazing thing. The longest single-season streak in Major League history. So they just keep winning, those two teams, and setting wild stats, I guess. So there you go, BWW, Buffalo Wild Wings. They get a little bonus Buffalo Wild Wings wild stat of the day. So the question is are they the best team in baseball? And in my estimation, because of the completeness, Jim, do you realize – and I want to get off this to get to the Red Sox in a second, but do you realize they've done this again with still without being fully healthy? Jason
yep.
Kipnis in with the team. Jason Kipnis has still been battling an injury. You know, Andrew Miller has been battling an injury. They have continued to – Salazar just came off of the DL again, and last night probably shouldn't have because he was terrible. And
Although, for what it's worth, Terry Francona did say after the game, look, there was nothing wrong with the health. He's health-wise, he just had no idea where the ball was going to go yesterday, and neither did we.
And I could still attribute that to the health part of it.
Sure.
Just because he wasn't sharp. He
right.
hasn't been pitching. He hasn't been, you know.
But it's not a new injury or a recurrence right. of an injury from last night. Just want to throw that, make sure everybody knows that.
Understood. But they even overcame that. They overcame the bad start and won anyway. And it, to me, it's the depth, it's the balance, it's the starting rotation and the bullpen, which may be the best in baseball. And I can't remember if it was Buster Olney or Tim Kirchner who said it was the best bullpen in baseball. And just so much balance offensively from the top to the middle to the bottom of the lineup. There's just so many guys contributing in so many different ways. That's what makes them dangerous. They're not just being, you know, carried by a murderer's row, a 3-4-5 monster that if you can get past and get by unscathed with that, you got some easy outs at the bottom of the lineup. No, you kind of don't with that team. You are pretty much playing with poison all the way up and down the lineup, at least the way they have been playing. And pitching-wise, they lead in every major statistical
yep.
category there is in baseball. And some of them are not even close. When we're talking about the Indians team pitching, holy cow, from team ERA to team whip to team strikeouts, virtually all of it. So you've just got to hand it to them. They might very well be the most complete team in baseball, pitching-wise.
Yeah, certainly pitching-wise. Well,
overall-wise, but I'm speaking specifically pitching-wise now.
Oh, certainly yeah. pitching-wise, and the stats, as you were just mentioning, some of them, you know, bear that out, and it's not just the starters. You know, it's the bullpens as well. It's just clicking completely for them. And again, as you mentioned, that's without Miller, who, for what it's worth, he is throwing another bullpen session today, but don't expect him back for at least another week or so, because if I'm the Indians, I'm taking as much time as necessary
yeah.
with Miller, but while still getting him a couple of regular season games to, you know, get his feet wet again before a play. You don't want first game back to be a playoff game, obviously. That's probably the path with him. But what's twisted, Bob, is that in place of some of these guys that are injured, they're finding guys you would have never heard of that are still doing the job. Perfect example, mentioning Miller, Tyler Olson. He's still, I think, sporting a zero ERA and essentially being the left-hander out of the bullpen while he's been out. I never would have guessed something like that would be possible.
No, I wouldn't either. You're right, and that's, you know, I mean, sometimes things just have to break the right way. But it's been the main guys who have carried them to these numbers that impress me the most. For example, their rotation. They lead the American League in shutouts with 16. You know how many second place has?
I'm going to guess 7.
No, it's better than that. It's 10.
Okay.
Two teams, in fact, have it. But that's 6 more shutouts
yep.
than the next closest competitor. They lead in team ERA in the American League with a 3.51 team ERA. That's a full quarter run better than second place Boston with 3.75. Think about that. By the way, last in that category is the Tigers. So just had to throw it out there, and we kind of probably expected that, I guess. Batting average against the Indians are second in batting average against behind the Yankees. 231 hitters hit against Yankee pitching, 239 the Indians, 241 the Astros. Red Sox, by the way, fifth, 247. I mean, you can go up and down these statistics. They lead in strikeouts with 1,363 strikeouts. If you just want to, calculate them all, it's just a remarkable five complete games, by the way, also leads. Tied, by the way, with Boston. No, correction. What am I saying? Apologies to those second-place Twins. My bad. The Twins have six complete games from their starting rotation, but we can see what those are worth. But the point is, they have just been the most complete team from start to finish, even though necessarily they didn't get off to the best start this season.
And so, I'll even add one more weird little stat. One more weird stat on top of those. I can't remember if it was last night or on Monday afternoon Labor Day's broadcast of the game.
Yeah.
But Matt Underwood and Rick Manning were talking about that right now. Yeah. The Indians as a staff, so starters and bullpen, everybody put together as a staff, are averaging more than 10 strikeouts per 9 innings. And if that holds,
that's crazy.
They would be the first ever major league team to do that. Nobody in that's all crazy. The years they played has apparently done that as a whole pitching staff.
Wow, that's an amazing feat if they're able to finish that out for the last 3 weeks of the season. And only time will tell. Now, I want to shift gears just briefly before we get a timeout here at the bottom of the hour to talk about what the Red Sox are doing and have done. Multiple reports say the Red Sox are cheating again. They are once again spying on teams and stealing signs. And they're using technology to do it. They're using Apple Watches. This report came in the New York Times yesterday. For decades, spying on another team has been a part of baseball's gamesmanship as much as brushback pitches and hard slides. The Red Sox have apparently added a modern and illegal twist. They used an Apple Watch to gain an advantage against the Yankees and other teams. Investigators for MLB have determined the Red Sox, who are in first place in the East and headed to the playoffs, executed a scheme to illicitly steal hand signals from opponents' catchers in games against the Yankees and other teams. The baseball inquiry began about 2 weeks ago after Brian Cashman of the Yankees filed a detailed complaint with the commissioner's office that included video of the Yankees' shot of the Red Sox dugout during their three-game series in Boston last month. The Yankees had long been suspicious that the Red Sox were stealing signs, contended the video showed a member of the Red Sox training staff looking at his Apple Watch in the dugout. The trainer then relayed messages to other players in the dugout, who in turn signaled teammates on the field about the type of pitch that would be thrown next. Baseball investigators corroborated the Yankees' claims based on video that the commissioner's office uses for instant replays and broadcasts. The commissioner's office then confronted the Red Sox, who admitted that their trainers had received signals from video replay personnel and relayed that information to Red Sox players by way of their watches, an operation that had been in place for at least several weeks. The Red Sox responded in kind yesterday, filing a complaint against the Yankees, saying that that team used cameras from its YES television network exclusively to steal signs during games, an assertion that the Yankees denied. Unclear what penalties, if any, Commissioner Rob Manfred will issue against the Red Sox and whether he'll order a more expansive investigation to determine the extent of the sign stealing. It is also unclear how he will proceed with the counter-complaint. All right. I'll stop there because the rest of the details are just, so much minutia. I'm going to say this, and I've talked about it before. So what? Now, I don't like the Red Sox. Now, I don't like the Yankees. You could say, I don't care what they do to each other. But so what? I have always believed that the sign-stealing rule in baseball is one of the dumbest rules ever. If you don't want your signs being stolen, hide them better. And if you know somebody is looking, mask them better. Change them better. Use indicators better. That is one of the things that has always bothered me. I'll never forget when I was working as a sideline reporter for the Oakland Raiders. And Greg Beekert, the middle linebacker, we were in Indianapolis at Lucas Oil. And Greg Beekert and the Raiders, he was a middle linebacker, and the Raiders defense got torched by Peyton Manning in the first half. and then in the second half shut them down cold. And the reason why is Greg Beekert, the middle linebacker, spent the whole first half trying to decode everything Peyton Manning did at the line of scrimmage. With all of his Omahas and gesticulations and calls and so on and so forth, he figured out what was coming based on what call, told his defense in the huddle, listen for this, and it means this. And they shut them down cold in the second half of that game back in 2001. All right? And that's the point. You know, he stole somebody's signs. He stole their signals by paying attention. And if Peyton Manning didn't like that, he should have changed his signals. That's the way it's supposed to be. There, if there's one rule in each sport that you could have wiped out, one illegality, if you will, what would it be? For baseball, to me, it would not be illegal to steal signs. There's probably one for football. There's probably one for basketball, for hockey, and maybe we'll talk about that in the second hour of the show. But for now, I got to get out of here and make room for Zach Meisel. But it's bad for the Red Sox to do this. But then again, baseball, man the hell up. You don't like sign stealing, hide them better. It's one of those rules I just don't think should exist, and I'm going to talk about that with you as we continue. Also want to talk about football. Doing a lot of baseball this hour, but I want to talk to you about fantasy football. Why? Because the NFL starts tomorrow. It is back, and you know what? If the NFL is back, that means FanDuel is back as well. Fantasy football for the everyday fan. You can play as a beginner on FanDuel. You can play as a veteran on FanDuel. You can play as an expert on FanDuel because there's contests for everybody, starting at just a dollar. That's right. New contests every week, too, with new rosters every week. So no busted seasons because of an injury. Just pick a contest, pick a roster, and watch your score in real time. Fantasy football on FanDuel is so much more fun than watching football the regular way. Why? Because you're more personally invested in it. You've got players in every game, including games you might not have been interested in. But you are now because you've got players that are scoring points for you, and maybe you've got to root against players scoring against you. Over 2.5 million players have won cash prizes playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. You can be one of them. Just go to FanDuel.com and click the Join Now button. New users get free entry into the NFL Sunday Million. That's over $1 million in cash prizes when you make your first deposit on FanDuel. Go to FanDuel.com and sign up with the promo code France, FRANTZ. Write that down so you don't get locked out by using the wrong name or the wrong spelling. That's FanDuel.com with the promo code France, FRANTZ, void where prohibited. So we got NFL to talk about, we got baseball to talk about, and all of it continues after the Sports Center, which is next right here on the Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, the Extravaganza rolling on now, 3:42. Time to check in with our good friend Zach Meisel about the red-hot and potentially best team in all of baseball. Kush, was I mistaken, or did I hear Pedro Gomez say that, Tim Kirkchen, and Buster Olney?
And that's basically what they all said,
They pretty much all said they're the best team in baseball right now. Now, we also know that the Dodgers are in the middle of a very bad skid. They have lost 9 out of their last 10. They have been the best team in baseball from start to finish, or a start to this point anyway. So we'll see where that goes. But Zach Meisel covers the Indians and more out there in Cleveland for the Northeast Ohio Media Group, Cleveland.com, Cleveland Plain Dealer, joining us right here on the Ticket. Hey, Zach, how are you, man?
Doing well, Bob. How are you?
I'm great, man. This is just so much fun to watch. All these goofy little records that we're seeing, you know, second team in baseball history to have at least 13-game winning streaks in back-to-back seasons, going back to the 60 and 61 Yankees. I mean, I hope people are really enjoying this and not just kind of letting this pass by as part of a long baseball season, because we're watching some historic stuff.
Yeah, you know what's funny is last year they go on the 14-game winning streak, and it was the pitching was just as good as it's been this time around, but I think they played a lot more close games that, you know, you're still stressed in the eighth and ninth innings. And a lot of people said, okay, well, because remember, they struggled after that, the 19-inning game took a lot out of them. They had to make some roster moves after that. And they didn't play very well for, I don't know, 6 weeks after that. And a lot of people were saying, oh, well, take away the 14-game winning streak. And, you know, last year they were kind of like a .500 team. And so there was some skepticism, some people who wanted to say it was just a fluke thing. And then this happens, and it's like, okay, well, maybe last year the team was actually legitimate. It wasn't a fluke that they made it all the way to Game 7 of the World Series, and they've kind of just reaffirmed it to everybody that this is a team that's going to be good. It's good now. It was good last year, and it should be good for another couple of years. So when they get things clicking, they're really, really difficult to beat as the Red Sox, White Sox, Tigers, and Yankees have found out over the last 2 weeks.
Do you think that those who felt that way, that were cynical last year about that, are remembering it now? And they're like, you know, hey, look, they were legit. They went to the seventh game of the World Series. They went to the 10th inning of the seventh game of the World Series. You know, you don't just, quote, take away a 14-game winning streak and then say, well, they were 500. I'm going to assume that people who questioned the legitimacy of their record last year are not going to make that same mistake.
Well, you know, fans are passionate. Fans are loyal. Fans are the biggest critics out there, because you only pay attention to your team and you think the grass is always greener everywhere else. And so you think that everything needs to be blown up. And, you know, they got to trade Shaw and Cody Allen and Andrew Miller when he blows it. I mean, you get kind of crazy sometimes just because it's the nature of a fan. And so earlier this year, when the Indians were struggling to find any modicum of consistency in April and May and part of June, I think there were people who were like, well, yeah, last year it was a fluke season and this just isn't going to work. And Encarnacion was a bust and Jose Ramirez was a flash in the pan. And I mean, it's easy to judge or to make judgments when you only take a month or two into consideration. But as baseball has proven time and time again, you play 162 games and almost always the cream rises to the top. And I think anyone who was, it's okay to be critical of how they played in April and May and to be frustrated with the inconsistencies. But I think we're learning now that, like, they were good all along. It's just a matter of sometimes it takes time to hit your stride. And look at how they've played lately and where they're positioned right now. And it's, you know, you kind of feel foolish if you were someone who was saying, ah, blow it up, when they were 31-31 back in early June.
Rare is a season, Zach, when a team goes through it without, you know, injuries. Everybody gets hit by the injury bug at some point or another, sometimes more severe than others. Clearly, and I feel like the Indians have had some severe injury situations, and yet they continue to push through. It's almost like we don't miss Jason Kipnis, who has been an all-star. You know, we don't miss, you know, Michael Brantley at times. We don't miss Andrew Miller being out for significant periods of time. We don't miss, you know, Gomes or whoever it is that's out for, you know, this particular head. Lonnie Chisenhall, who led the team in RBIs in the first half, is out for a month and a half, and we continue to rake, or we continue to get strikes. We continue to, you know, to win. And again, not that's unique to the Indians. A lot of teams are able to overcome injuries, but to do that the way at the level that they have, and to put together these kinds of runs, including what five? I think I heard this earlier, Zach. Five different times this year they've had 5-game winning streaks or longer. To do that while missing key components of your team at various points, I just think speaks a lot to what they're really made of.
Yeah, Bob, this 13-game winning streak makes no sense, because you look at who they've had to plug in, and like Ryan Merritt threw shutout baseball against Kansas City. Mike Clevinger did the same thing. Danny Salazar was rolling, and then he lands on the disabled list, and yet the guys who have filled in for him have been great. Josh Tomlin stepped in and won a game in Detroit after coming off the disabled list. You have so many pieces and parts coming and going, and like you look at the bottom of the lineup, and whether it's Eric Gonzalez or Giovanni Urshela or Yandy Diaz or one of your catchers or one of these rookies who's come in, Francisco Mejia, Greg Allen, have contributed. The bottom of the lineup has made it so that they don't miss Kipnis and they don't miss Chisenhall and they don't miss Jay Bruce when he misses a few games. I mean, it's been remarkable, and I think a little bit of it is some of the momentum they've built up and some of the confidence where they're on this winning streak, and no matter who they plug in, they're going to keep rolling. And I think that helps, but it's incredible, and it makes it like the role of an analyst and us talking about it is made obsolete, just because what can you say? It's incredible, and it, no one could have predicted it. I think we all thought they were really going to miss Andrew Miller. That hasn't been the case yet. We thought that losing Kipnis would kind of chalk it up to a lost season for him, and that they didn't really have an ideal replacement, and none of that has mattered. Lonnie Chisenhall, like, it's great to have him back, but now you don't even know where you're going to play him.
Right.
So it's incredible, and they've realized here that they have more depth than maybe they even realized, and it's going to make for an interesting question or two when they have to decide on a playoff roster, because you've got guys who are contributing who you probably didn't even think would be in the mix.
That's a great point. Zach Meisel is our guest. He covers Indians and more out in Cleveland. Indians are the hottest team in baseball with a 13-game streak, the longest in the majors this season. They may be the best team in baseball. Zach, I'm going to read a bunch of awards to you, and I want you to tell me how many of them come true. Most valuable player in the American League, Jose Ramirez. Comeback player of the year, Michael Brantley. Most improved player of the year, Trevor Bauer. Manager of the year, Tito Francona. And Cy Young Award winner, Corey Kluber. I think you could make a legitimate argument for every one of them. Now, there's still 3 weeks to go in the regular season. Many of those things will sort themselves out as somebody really pulls away, perhaps. The other contenders in each category, they're not going to sweep all of those awards. They may not win any of those awards. Which ones do they win in your mind?
I think Kluber wins the Cy Young, and that's just...
He's passed that already?
I think... It's pretty close. I hate this. I've had a Cy Young vote for, I think, the last 4 years, and it's never been easy. It's like I spend so much time just stressing over this, and it's really unhealthy. I'm going to have to request, like, manager or rookie next year, I think. But
easy. You want Ron Guidry to go 25-3 with a 1.78, so you don't have to think about
right.
that.
Right. Yeah, and you know, I didn't think it would be difficult. I thought I could have pegged Chris Sale to win it months ago, and then Kluber goes on this tear. I wish we could know what would have been different if Kluber didn't miss a month and he could have put up more numbers. Because I'm curious, you know, some voters might just look at the total number of strikeouts or the total number of innings, and Kluber is still like top three in those categories, even though he missed, I don't know, four or five starts. Yeah, I think if Kluber keeps pitching the way he has over the last 2 months, it's probably his to lose, but maybe by a little edge over Sale. But that's probably the one I'd give the best odds on. Ramirez, his numbers are there. Like, Aaron Judge has gotten so much hype, so much national media exposure. You look at his numbers compared to Jose Ramirez's. Jose Ramirez's are just as good, if not better.
Way better in the second half, despite Ramirez sure. having his own slump. You know, Judge yeah. since the All-Star break and since the Home Run Derby, and I don't want to play that. Well, that's why you don't do the arm. But because that's an easy, low-hanging fruit thing to say. But Judge just has not been as good in the second half as he was in the first. Jose had a bit of a slump, but he has been consistent as heck, really, all throughout.
What's the one category, and not home runs, but other than that, the one category you'd think Judge has a huge edge on him on would be slugging percentage. And yet I think Judge is at 570 and Ramirez is at 568. They rank 1 and 2 in the American League. So Ramirez, I don't know if he has any holes as a hitter. I mean, he's as well-rounded as they come. He steals bases. He's struck out 64 times this year. I think Judge is at 182. So there's an argument there that the issue is that Jose Altuve probably is the front runner. Mike Trout might have something to say about it. I think it's a little bit of an uphill climb for Ramirez at this point, but I think he certainly can finish in the top three. I think Francona, it's interesting, like if he wouldn't have won Manager of the Year last year, I think maybe he wins it this year. I don't really know how Manager of the Year voters think. If you're going on injuries and stuff like that, then Francona's as viable a candidate as anybody. Maybe AJ Hinch wins it just because Houston's been pretty good all year long and they've had injuries of their own, but
they have.
I mean, you're right, like these categories, there the Indians are going to make some noise in them,
Bauer?
Even if they don't win.
What about Bauer as most improved? I mean, if somebody would have said to you in March, right before they started in April, that the first Indians pitcher to 15 wins is going to be Trevor Bauer, who, you know, in the offseason was known as much for drone mishap as anything else. If somebody would have said he's going to win 15 games before Corey Kluber does, I don't know what kind of odds you would have put on that, but he has, especially in the second half, has just been dominant. And I mean dominant to the tune of an ERA of what? In the second half, somewhere in the mid to upper twos? That's got to be, you know, a candidate for most improved player, yes?
Yeah, I mean, it's not even just March, though. It's, if you would have told me that in May or in mid-June, I wouldn't have believed you either. He got off, and I think that's kind of what would play against him here, too. He got off to such a bad start that a lot of his improvement has come in season. So, yeah, I don't know if, you know, people usually just look at the full season totals.
Right.
And yeah, he's had a good year, and if you really consider what he's done recently, it's been integral to the Indians' success. But because he got off to such a bad start and his ERA was in the like upper sixes, yeah, for about 2 months. I think that kind of works against him.
What about Brantley, who wasn't really supposed to start the season with the team? Was you know, his return was accelerated, and he excelled, excelled really from the very beginning of the season on. The power numbers that he has had in the past in some of his Silver Slugger seasons have not been there, but you know, he's got to be a candidate there for comeback, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most validating thing for him was, even though his, you know, there were other guys who had better numbers for sure, but the fact that he was chosen by his peers too to be an all-star was just that perfect validation for how hard he worked to get back, and not only just to get back and kind of be a part-time player, but to get back and be an all-star, a guy who can threaten to hit 300 and who, even though Jose Ramirez is having the greatest year we've seen, or we could have imagined he would have, Terry Francona still wanted to keep Michael Brantley in that number three spot just because he trusted Brantley in those big situations more than anybody else. So, yeah, it's, you know, I don't know the field of candidates for this one. I haven't done the research or thought about it, but Brantley has to be at or near the top of that list just based on everything he went through last year. I mean, he was legitimately concerned that he would never be able to play again. And then in July, he's in Miami on the field with the game's best. That says a lot.
It really does. Zach Meisel is our guest. Just a couple more quickies. There's 3 weeks of baseball left before we get into postseason. It's a three-game lead right now the Astros have for the best record in the American League. It's weird that we're able to talk about this now because they had such a huge lead over all of the American League for most of the season, for the first 3 months anyway. To see them kind of come back to the pack a little bit. They've had some injuries, as we pointed out. The Indians catch fire. So it's a three-game lead over the Indians that they have. They added Justin Verlander, who went last night, by the way, was very sharp. They have a four-and-a-half-game lead over the Red Sox. So if I'm asking you, Zach, with 3 weeks to go, how does that work out seeding-wise? What's your prediction?
I think it'll stay the way it is. I think the Indians are in a really good spot, and I know Houston's probably feeling the pressure a little bit. They'll probably feel it a little bit more. I'm curious to see what happens when the Indians, when this streak finally ends, if it ends. I think, you know, last year they played 500 ball for a while afterwards. They're going to come down to earth. It's just a matter of how fast. And I think it's tough. They've made up so much ground. It's like even making up more ground is a lot to ask. And they're going to have to sort through all of the playing time and getting guys rest and trying to figure out that playoff roster, where it might take some experimenting and it might take a six-man rotation for a little bit. It might take some guys pitching in spots where they're not accustomed to, just to see if they can handle the pressure. And I think with the Astros, it's kind of just full steam ahead and incorporate Verlander, get Correa back and get him back going. And with the Indians, there's so many different pieces they have to sort out. And so, you know, I don't think that'll necessarily hurt them, but they do have an 11-game lead in the division. They don't have to worry about that. And so I think they can kind of, they don't have to push at 100% and risk even more injuries than they've already had. And because of that, I think they'd love the number one seed, but I don't think they're going to go all out trying to get it.
Good stuff. Great answer, too. They don't really have to. They're in a good position either way, but it's just amazing that that's even in play right now here on September 6th. Zach Meisel, read him, follow him. He is online with the Cleveland.com, Northeast Media Group, Cleveland Plain Dealer. Zach, thanks for the breakdown on all things Tribe. We always appreciate when you make the time for us, good sir, and hope to chat with you again as we get close to the playoffs.
Sounds good, Bob. Thank you.
Thank you, Z. Z Mize joining us right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. And while we go from baseball to football, let me remind you where you watch your football. Of course, it's at B-Dubs. B-Dubs is always watching football, all of it. This season, they're going above and beyond. Countless taps and HD screens, you know you expect that there from B-Dubs, but now the entire place is committed to creating the perfect atmosphere for watching football, food and drinks included. They've called up a classic menu item to the roster. It's the 35th Weck sandwich, and they're also featuring a limited time only Blue Moon barbecue sauce, which I cannot wait to try. It's going to be this weekend. There's more. You've got to come in to find out to see what it is, however. It's the place with the best football experience going. It's Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports, please drink responsibly. Hour number two, we're going to talk a little bit of college football, by the way, late in hour number two, as Mike Jinks, head coach of Bowling Green Falcons, will talk about the season opening loss to Michigan State, and we'll look ahead to this week. We're also going to give away more Lions tickets. I told you yesterday we'd do it in the 3 o'clock hour, but we ran out of time in the 3 o'clock hour. I've got Lions tickets pushing up toward the 4:30 portion of the show. If you want to go to the Lions season opener on Sunday against the Cardinals at Ford Field, I've got one-on-one trivia that's coming your way in the next half hour right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now Jose Ramirez lifts one high in the air. Deep left field. Liriano back. He's out of room. That's out of here. Seven. And he might have just hit another one. Deep left field. Gone to Souvenir City. Jose Ramirez with his second home run of the game. Rick the third. On his way to third and a rundown. The 1-2. Swung out and miss. He struck him out to end the game. And the Indians have run their win streak to 13 in a row.
Talking to people around baseball, they believe the Indians are still the best team in the American League, top to bottom. The Astros getting Justin Verlander absolutely notches them up a little bit. But the Indians are hard charging, and one of the biggest reasons is they've got that rotation. But the biggest thing the Indians have going for them, aside from that offense, is the best bullpen in all of baseball.
They've won 13 games in a row, consecutive seasons now, and everything is really, you know, falling in place now for the Indians, especially offensively, especially with the way Ramirez is swinging, and they're going to get Michael Brantley back for the playoffs.
The front office went out and loaded up the team, and this is their window for winning. The only question we have about this team is about Andrew Miller, whether or not he's going to be okay for the postseason. From what I understand, they basically have shut him down, trying to rest him up and hoping that as they ramp him back up, that knee will hold up enough for him to be effective in the postseason. Besides that, I think right now the Indians are the best team in baseball.
It is Justin Verlander Day, making his debut with the Houston Astros. Swing and a miss.
Yeah.
Strike three call. How about that from Verlander? He finishes the night at 99 miles an hour, just above the knees.
The closest thing I can compare it to is opening day. Kind of nerves, the unknown, don't really want to let everybody down. New team, but these guys have made the process pretty easy on me. Was really hoping to hit 100 there, but didn't quite get it. Honestly, just a good kind of ending to the night. This is how you win tight ball games.
These two sides are still fighting over where this case should be heard. The NFL, presumably last night, filed something that said this should be heard in New York. Meanwhile, they've got to deal with this Texas thing, the NFLPA file. The big thing is, if a TRO is granted, he plays. Elliott plays until the case is heard, and that could be weeks, if not months. If his temporary restraining order is denied, he sits, he gets suspended, he has to sit on the sidelines, and then that still same process generally still holds. Just like the NFL is going to make the Brady argument all over whatever court they're going to be in, hey, there's already precedent out there, this shouldn't even be a case, it shouldn't even be in federal court. The NFLPA is going to argue about inconsistency. When they gave Josh Brown a one-game suspension, I thought that was the biggest mistake they made in this policy. Here you have somebody who presumably they knew admitted to abuse. And again, we're calling this a zero-tolerance policy. Do it once, even for a second, you should be out six games. They gave him one game. Here you have Ezekiel Elliott, and he doesn't get afforded those same circumstances in a case where it seems like the story is inconsistent. That's the problem. The consistency is going to be the thing the Players Association will harp on.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hour number two underway at 11 minutes after 4 o'clock. We will talk a little bit about the Ezekiel Elliott appeal. It was denied, as you have heard by now. He is going to have to serve six games, but he will be allowed to play in week one, and one of the strange, weird, little quirky things that the NFL has in its discipline policy. Is Zeke Elliott being railroaded? Well, some say yes. Some say no. Some say the Players Association, if he is being railroaded, is to blame because they are the ones who make the decision. By way of the collective bargaining agreement about who gets to set suspensions, who gets to hear the appeals, and who gets to be the final arbiter of all of these things. And that, of course, has come down to be Roger Goodell. Now, before we get into hardcore sports here in this hour, and by the way, coming up, we're going to talk Bowling Green Falcons football with Mike Jenks, head coach at BG, talking about his team's opening season opening loss, I should say, to Sparty. They've got South Dakota next, and Mike Jenks will be joining us and talking at about 4:40 this afternoon, so about a half an hour from now. But outside of sports, and before we get into the hardcore stuff, I want to remind you of what we are doing next week, next Tuesday on September 12th, all right? We want you to join us because at some point between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m., you need to come and help donate to Hurricane Relief, the Hurricane Relief Drive that we are hosting at Walt Churchill's Market, 26625 North Dixie Highway in Perrysburg. If you know where it is, make it easy on yourself. If not, Google it up. We'll do whatever you got to do, GPS it. We're going to be collecting items to fill up a truck. Truck's been donated by Bolt Express. We're going to take it to Texas for the hurricane victims. Now, some, you know full well, there are a lot of people who are in very, very dire straits there, and help is coming from all over the country. This is our part. This is our way of doing this. We're sending support and relief from Northwest Ohio. And, oh, by the way, you might as well get comfortable because, who knows, with Hurricane Irma and her Category 5, 185-mile-per-hour winds churning through the Atlantic, blowing through the Caribbean already, and now targeted potentially to impact South Florida, yeah, it could be, there could be even more need coming up. By the way, that decision has been made today. The season opening game that was supposed to be in Miami between the Buccaneers and the Dolphins will not be played. They're going to try to decide whether to move it to week 11 when both teams coincidentally and conveniently have their off, their bye weeks, or find another circumstance, find another way to play that game. But it will not be in Miami. Anyway, we want you to be there on Tuesday, okay? All kinds of things needed, non-perishable food items, things you would imagine, personal hygiene items, but also things you might not think about, tarps, shovels, 55-gallon plastic bags for cleanups, hand tools. All of these kinds of things are going to be needed. So join us this coming Tuesday at Walt Churchill's Market in Perrysburg. Brought to you by Walt Churchill's Market, Bolt Express, Impact with Hope, and, of course, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Not really brought to you by, but how about just assisted by? Because that's what we're trying to do, is assist those in need. Okay. I mentioned before we got Lions tickets. We're going to do them here before the bottom of the hour. We'll have some trivia. We'll have some one-on-one opportunities for you to win Lions tickets against the Cardinals in the season opener coming up on Sunday at Ford Field. But I'm going to go back to baseball just for a second, Cushlin. I talked about this in the top of the show. The Red Sox have been accused of and have essentially been busted by Major League Baseball stealing signs and then using Apple Watches to relay information to other players. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of high-tech sign stealing. The Red Sox have accused the Yankees of doing high-tech sign stealing by way of their Yes Yankee Entertainment System cameras out in center field, stealing catcher signs and relaying information to the dugout, etc. Now they have been accused by the Yankees. The Red Sox have been accused by the Yankees. And I said before, and I'm going to say it again, I don't care. I don't care if somebody steals signs, because to me, if you let somebody steal your signs, that's a you problem. That's not a them problem. That's a you problem as far as I'm concerned. Hide your signs better. Mask them. Use first or second sign indicators. Make it difficult for people to figure out what you're doing. That's kind of what, you know, what is done. Listen, if a boxer in the corner, if his corner man is yelling instructions to him in between rounds too loudly, so much so that the guy across the ring can hear it and then tells him what he's going to do, that's a him problem. If a quarterback at the line of scrimmage has made his audible calls at the line too easy to figure out for the other team, that they steal those signals, they figure out what's coming next, that's a quarterback problem. That's not the defense's problem. It's the other team's job, as far as I'm concerned, to try to figure out what's coming next. And if they can steal that information by deciphering it, by witnessing it, by seeing it, you know, as the catcher is sloppy and shoddy in terms of his own hiding of the signs and his own order of the signs, etc., if somebody makes it easy on somebody else to steal, that's a them problem. I'm trying to think of something in the NBA, too. If there's a hand gesture that the point guard makes when calling a certain play, and they use it too many times, and the defense figures out, I know what that sign means. That sign means it's a backdoor alley-oop, or that sign means it's a high pick and roll. I know how to defend it because I've seen that sign before. Guess what? That's not the defense's fault for figuring that out. It's the offense's fault for being so damn predictable. That's a point guard problem. Well, you ask me, if somebody's stealing a catcher's signs, that's a catcher's problem. It's not the the team that's stealing the signs problem. Cushion, you agree or disagree?
No, I kind of agree with that. I really do. Your assessment that if they're stealing signs from you, you know, it's on you. I'm with you on that. The only quirk in this, and this is, I think, what people are, some are anyway, up in arms about is the technology use, the whole Apple Watch thing or whatever. And there is technically some rule in there about not being able to use electronic devices, things, you know, in the dugout and things like that. But so on that level, then my thought becomes really the same as the title of a Dan Perry's article on this on CBSSports.com, which is stealing signs is okay as long as you do it old school. Because this whole episode reminded me of certain things that I had heard, you know, about baseball growing up and everything. One of them being Willie Mays, for example, was renowned for getting to second and within two batters, while perched on second, having decoded all the opposing players' signs. And he used to be praised for that kind
that's
of thing.
Right.
Used to be praised. So I think the only thing that's mucking this up a little bit is the technology use, that the whole Apple Watch thing. So either way, technology or no, that's on you if you're getting your signs stolen. Otherwise, I'm 1,000% fine with it, especially if you're doing this in the old school way, like in the example I just laid out from, say, Willie Mays way, way back when.
Yeah, I totally agree. So to me, that's one of the things where, and I don't even care if there is a little bit of electronic usage in this as well, Jim, I just think they need to eliminate the stigma and the rule against sign stealing. Just protect it better. By the way, if you're wondering, here's how it works. There was a detailed thing in the New York Times, kind of a diagram laid out.
Yeah.
Number one, catcher gives the sign. Number two, Boston decodes the sign. Number three, the video room sends the crack code by way of the Apple Watch to the dugout. Dugout relays the code to the runner on second, signals to the batter what pitch is coming next. It's really pretty ingenious. And again, I will call it pretty cool. And to me, if you're going to be high-tech in stealing, then you got to just better be high-tech or, you know, more covert, if you will, in hiding
yep.
the signs. And I think this is the one rule of baseball. If I could change one thing, and I kind of just kind of kicked that out there, if I could change one thing about every sport, and I don't want to make it like that. Well, let's make touchdowns worth 12 points. Not change one
right.
thing. But if there's one thing that is currently considered illegal that I would make legal in baseball, it would be sign stealing. In football, I've thought about this a little bit. The low-hanging fruit to me is the punishment for end zone celebrations.
Yeah.
Let them celebrate. Let them be stupid. Let them look silly if they want to do dances or whatever. You know, let them do it. It's hard to score a touchdown. Let them celebrate it if they want to. That's one thing that's illegal that I think they ought to let go. And this year, by the way, they're going to relax some of those rules.
Right.
But that would be one of those. Can you think of one that you would change, or is sign stealing yours in baseball and anything else?
I mean, the sign stealing one is a good one for baseball. Until stories like this come about, I sometimes forget that's technically a rule. Because again, what I cited, you know, there's old school Hall of Famers who are renowned for stealing signs of opponents, and we praise them for it. So to be honest, yeah, sometimes until stories like this come up, I forget that that's even technically a rule. So I'm definitely going to go agree with you on that. Yeah, that's a rule that needs to be tossed out. It just does. In terms of a different kind of rule, oh yeah, I'm not sure. I'd have to really think about that
for a few minutes.
Baseball specifically.
I think basketball has most everything okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's something that's blatant. Well, this is a rule in the NBA that shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Maybe illegal defense. Illegal defense is something, you know, defense of 3 seconds. That's something
yeah.
that I don't really like. You know what? Position them wherever they want to be positioned. Defend wherever they want to defend, for crying out loud. And the offense has to figure out a tackle.
Yeah.
That's one of those goofy things where I might
eliminate. Not only that, you don't really need that rule in a twisted way anymore. Because if you recall, and I think this is correct, the genesis of that, the defense of 3 seconds, was from way back in the day when you had big true centers and you didn't want them just standing under the hoop in the middle of the paint.
But then again, that was before you were allowed to play zone.
Right, exactly. So
but
things
you're just
have
not
changed.
Allowed to, not allowed to camp down in there for those.
Exactly. So things, so certain things have changed in basketball, not to mention the center position as well. So that rule doesn't really have the effect that
yeah.
it once did.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, We could really spend an entire show on this. I didn't plan to do that. I just kind of wanted to kind of throw things out off the cuff of things that I would change. But just to me, the baseball one is the biggest one. I mean, for crying out loud. And again, I have no reason. Please don't misunderstand. I have no reason whatsoever to defend or support or whatever the Boston Red Sox. I can't stand them. Cannot stand them. If the Indians play in the first round of the playoffs, I hope they sweep them. I certainly cannot stand the New York Yankees. They are, after all, the New York Yankees. So let's get that clear.
Right.
This is a total general statement. Let's put the onus on the teams giving signs to hide those signs. It should be just that simple.
Well said.
Pitchers know when they come out for meetings at the mound to cover their mouth so that lip readers can't read what they're saying. They cover their mouth with their gloves. That's important. Football coaches do the same thing when they're calling plays on the sideline to avoid lip readers who could then transmit information to the other sideline. They cover their mouths with their play cards usually. Just be more covert, and if the other team figures it out, good for them. You've got to change the way you do things. That's the way I see it. All right, speaking of football, I told you I've got Lions tickets, and I wanted to give them away this half hour, so I want to do that now. Kush, let's open up the phone lines again at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. I need four players because I'm going to have two one-on-one contests for a couple of pairs of tickets to the Lions and the Cardinals coming up on Sunday in the season opener, okay? So while you fill up the phone lines with contestants who want to win tickets in one-on-one trivia contests at 866-240-1065, I will preview the NFL opening weekend from the fantasy perspective. That's right. With the return of the NFL tomorrow night, Chiefs and Patriots, that means FanDuel is back as well. FanDuel, fantasy football for you. For me, for everyday fans, if you're a beginner, you can play against other beginners. You don't have to worry about being smoked by some expert. If you are an expert, play against other experts and challenge yourself. Listen, there are contests for everybody at FanDuel.com. I mean, contests start at just $1. Like, there's no risk, but there's so much fun. Whether you win money on every contest that you enter or you don't, it just makes football so much more fun. No busted seasons. You don't have to pick one roster and ride it through the entire season. You change it each and every week. That's the beauty of FanDuel. Contests for everybody starting each week. I mean, and to be quite honest, there are some games that I'm not that interested in. I don't watch, you know, I don't have the Sunday ticket thing, and I don't watch every single game, but I will check out every single game that I have to if I've got players in that game that are scoring points for me. For example, the Browns-Steelers season opener, probably not that great of a matchup. The Steelers probably ought to roll, but you know what? I'm going to pay attention because if I put out Antonio Brown in my lineup, which I believe I will, against a very young Brown secondary, he's going to score points for me in addition to for his team, and that's the beauty of FanDuel. You know, over 2.5 million players have won cash money playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. You can be one of them. Sign up today. Go to FanDuel.com and click the Join Now button. And when you do, use my code France, F-R-A-N-T-Z. Now, if you're a new user and you've never done this, you'll get free entry into the NFL Sunday Million with over $1 million in cash prizes when you make your first deposit on FanDuel. Just go to FanDuel.com and sign up with the promo code France, F-R-A-N-T-Z. That's FanDuel.com. Promo code France, void where prohibited. All right, let's talk NFL. Let's talk about the Lions, and let's give some Lions tickets away. Kush, are we ready to rock?
Indeed we are. Let's do it.
Let's bring up Rod, who's calling from a truck someplace. Hey, Rod, how you doing, brother?
Good. How are you?
Good, man. Where are you driving?
I'm driving to Liberty Center, Ohio.
What you hauling?
Oh, no, I'm just driving home. My pickup truck.
Okay, gotcha. I thought you were a big rig driver. All good, my man. No. All right, well, you're going to play a little trivia here, and you're going to be challenged by Eric, who's calling from Temperance. Hey, Eric, how are you, man?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
I am great, guys. Listen, this is the way we're going to do this. I've got a pair of tickets on the line for you, and one of you is going to take it. It's to the season opener, of course, at Ford Field between the Lions and the Cardinals on Sunday at 1 o'clock, and this is how it's going to be. I'm going to ask a trivia question, and I'm going to give you each a chance to answer it. Don't have to rush, because I'm going to go one after the other. And you have to give me an answer within 5 seconds, because I don't want you to have time to Google it on your phones, okay? Whoever is closest to the answer, the correct answer, will be the winner. All right? Does that sound fair, guys?
Yep. Sounds good.
All right. You don't have to know it spot on. Just have to be the closest. And we're going to go with Matthew Stafford, now the richest player in the history of the National Football League. And will remain so until the next star quarterback's deal comes up and they eclipse him. But at any rate, Matthew Stafford is the Lions' all-time passing yardage leader. what is, going into this season, his current passing yards total? Rod, since I came to you first, I'm going to ask you first. In 5 seconds, how many yards has Matthew Stafford passed for going into this season?
85,000 yards.
Did you say that again, 85,000?
Correct.
85,000 is what Rod says. Okay, Eric in Temperance, you tell me how many yards has Matthew Stafford passed for going into this season?
I'm going to go 9,000.
9,000? Holy cow, he's thrown for that many in 2 years.
Or 90,000, I'm sorry, 90,000.
Oh, you're going 90,000?
Yeah, right. I'm sorry.
That's okay, that's okay. So you 90 is what you want?
Yes.
Okay, Rod says 85,000. Eric says 90,000. Grand total number of yards Matthew Stafford has passed for in his 8 seasons in the National Football League, 30,303 yards. That means Rod, with his 85,000, is actually, believe it or not, the better of the two guesses. You do know that the career record for passing yardage is only at about 70,000, right?
No, obviously I didn't.
I messed that one up for sure.
That's okay, guys. I think Peyton's got the record at some 70,000. Peyton Manning does. No, Matthew Stafford has put some good numbers up, but no, not to that tune yet. So 30,000, that means, Rod, you were closer. Eric, thanks for playing, brother. We appreciate it, man.
All right, bye.
You got it. Rod, hold the line so we can get your information, okay? There it
okay,
is.
Okay, thank
that
you.
That's simple. Rod is a winner, and he has got a pair of tickets to the Lions and Cardinals game on Sunday at Ford Field. Now, I've got one more pair left for today. We can do this again tomorrow, but I got one pair left for today. And this is going to be a one-on-one battle between Seth in Bowling Green. Let's bring Seth onto the line. Kush, Seth, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right, Seth, how you doing?
Not too bad. How you doing?
Hey, are you a Falcons fan living out there in BG?
More or less Falcon hockey.
Falcon hockey, okay. I was just wondering what you thought of the performance against Sparty last week. Obviously a tough thing to do up in at Sparty, but okay, so Seth at BG is contestant number one, and contestant number two is Sean in Toledo. Hey, Sean, how are you?
I'm good.
All right, fellas, we're going to do this the same way we just did with the other guys. I'm going to ask a question. I want you both to give me your best guess, and whoever's closest to the right answer will be our winner and go to the game on Sunday. We're going to go, gentlemen, to the special teams game. Longtime Lions kicker Jason Hansen is the Lions' all-time leader in points scored. How many points did Jason Hansen score as a kicker in his National Football League career? I'm sorry, in his Detroit Lions career. Seth and BG, you were up first, so you give us the first answer. How many do you think?
250.
250 points is the guess of Seth in Bowling Green. Write that down, Jimmy. We got 250 from Seth. And Sean in Toledo. What about you? How many points do you think Jason Hansen, the leading scorer in Lions history, was responsible for?
I'm going to go for 2,000.
2,000. Wow. We got quite a discrepancy there. All right. Seth in Bowling Green says Jason Hansen scored 250 points. Sean in Toledo says Jason Hansen scored 2,000 points. And the answer is 2,150. Holy cow. Sean, almost on the money right there. Very well done. Had you did you know that, or was that a wild guess?
No, I'm a big Lions fan, so I've been stacking up and studying up on my Lions statistics for you guys.
Brother, that is outstanding. Very well done. Hey, Seth, sorry it didn't work out, my man, but thanks for calling and playing. You're not out of the woods, though, by the way, or that's not the right phrasing, but you have another shot. It's just going to be tomorrow, okay? We're going to do this again tomorrow afternoon, so if you dial back and get in time, you still have a shot at it tomorrow. Sound good?
Yep.
Okay, Seth, thanks, brother. All right, so, Sean, you hold the line. We'll get your ticket or your personal information just so we can get you set up with those tickets. There you have it. Two more choice winners for the Lions and the Cardinals coming up on Sunday at Ford Field. So congratulations to our winners. It looks like it was Rod and Sean. Rod on his way back to Liberty Center, I think he said, and then Sean in Toledo. Okay, here's what we've got. I want to remind you, first of all, a couple of quick reminders. Coming soon, your chance at $1,000 four times a day. The 4K a day contest starts on Thursday the 14th. That's 1 week from tomorrow right here on ESPN 106.5. The tickets, make sure you're paying attention to that. And what we're going to do now is get ourselves a bottom-of-the-hour sports center. Then we're going to come back, and we're going to get set for Mike Jenks, the head coach of Bowling Green. That's the reason I asked the caller if he was a BG fan, because BG dropped one in the season opener. No shame, of course, losing at Michigan State. But what about South Dakota? That's the next challenge. We're going to check in with Mike Jenks coming up here in just a few. But SportsCenter coming your way now, right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Hey, welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Kushlin hanging out with you right now. We're talking a lot of college football, as we will, of course, do all throughout the season. Pretty much everybody you can think of in the area, we're talking about them. And right now, that means it's time to talk a little Bowling Green Falcons football. Fell at Michigan State, coming up for the joint opener this Saturday against South Dakota. And as we love to do every week, talking Falcons football, we welcome back in the head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons, Mike Jenks, joining us back on the program. Hi, Coach. How you doing?
Doing well, Jim. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thanks so much for sparing the time. We love chatting with you. 35-10, let's start there from this past Saturday against Michigan State. It is still Michigan State. It was on the road. But kind of honestly, what I was impressed with is into the second quarter and really through at least the half, you guys were very, very much in this game. What was going right early on?
Well, it was nothing tricky, no big secret, Jim. Like I told you, we're not where we need to be by any means, but we're trending in the right direction. Our kids are believing in what we're preaching. We got to learn to fight 12 rounds, against that quality of an opponent at their place. I mean, we got to understand that we deserve to be on that football field, and got to have the mindset that, we're going to go toe-to-toe for 60 minutes. We went toe-to-toe for 30, playing really Big Ten football, playing great defense. They were playing good defense, getting turnovers. We missed a couple big plays that really could have made that thing interesting. Late in the second quarter, we could have had a 10-0 lead, and, we got to learn to hit those plays. And I think a lot of it is I don't want to say pressing, but feeling like that it's all on your shoulders. You know what I mean? And understand that we've got a good scheme, and we've got enough talent right now, and depth in places that we can compete with anybody.
Yeah, and you certainly did, again, at least for 30 minutes in that game. It was 14-3 at the half, but you guys had the field goal lead into the second quarter. And obviously, as you said, and you said to me last week when we talked to you for kind of a season preview, you're not where you want to be. That's true. But again, there's got to be some individual things. You mentioned defense. Anything offensively, especially early on, you could take away from this game?
I tell you what, probably the biggest deal offensively, and look, I didn't even want to get into it after the game. Lorenzo Taborn, who's our starting left guard and really one of our better linemen, got hurt his shoulder in pregame and didn't play a snap. And we didn't know until 3 minutes before kickoff. And we threw a freshman out there, Caleb McBride, so I want to give him a shout out. And while he got baptized by fire, going against some grown men down there, he didn't have one missed assignment. We didn't get the push that we would have liked, but really for the most part, it just looked like we couldn't get anything established instead of throwing a young kid out there going against two seniors in his first start. So I was proud of the football team and the way they responded to that early. That was a tough thing to happen right before the ball game starts. And so I was happy with that offensively. Other than that, they did what we asked them to do. We talked about having an identity. We talked about being a tough physical football team and being disciplined. We didn't have a lot of penalties. We talked about winning the turnover battle. We won the dang turnover battle. We had one turnover ourselves, and then was James Morgan would be the first one to tell you it was a play that he checked to a pass that was just wasn't the right thing to do, and we'll get that fixed. But by not having that catastrophic play offensively, we gave ourselves a chance to be in that ball game. And if you hit some of those plays, then my gosh, you can go to a Michigan State or Northwestern and you can come back with a victory. So again, not where we want to be, but saw some things that are definitely trending in the right direction.
We're talking with head coach Mike Jenks of the Bowling Green Falcons. They fell last week to Michigan State in East Lansing, 35-10. I got the home opener, of course, coming up this Saturday. We'll get to that here in just a few minutes. Talk to me about James Morgan's effort in this game. You mentioned the one turnover and what he would have said, but overall, give me an assessment of his performance out there.
Well, we've got to be more consistent at the quarterback spot. Period. Nobody's going to be harder on the quarterback than I am. Head coach and the quarterback, we've got to stand up and we got to take the heat. If you're going to go into an environment like that, Can you tell me one team that's going into an environment like that as an underdog and the quarterback hadn't excelled and played well? That has to happen. And he has that ability. We've put some weapons around him. We won a few times, especially early. I don't think they expected that. I really felt like they were going to commit the seventh, eighth man to the run, and say, okay, we'll be able to handle you one-on-one. And they were kind of shocked that we were able to run by him a couple of times. We got to hit those throws. He knows that, and then we will do that.
Tell me about the defensively in this game. Obviously, as you mentioned, you won the overall turnover battle 3-1, so you forced some fumbles on the day. But obviously, a Big Ten opponent in their building kind of did what Big Ten opponents in their building do in the second half. Overall, defensively, how did you feel your guys after this one?
Well, you know, again, I'm proud of their effort, but not satisfied in the performance because I expect more. I expect better. I'm telling you, we've got some depth on that side of the ball with the guys we recruited and the guys coming back from injury. We can line up and we can play with anybody from a defensive standpoint as long as we keep our head in the game. We've got to continue to work and practice and get ourselves in game shape. What I challenged those defensive unit with this morning is you know, we didn't get a lot of help from the offense. Offensively, they're on the field for 45, 47 plays in the first half, but we got to get in condition to where we can play a game like that, to where we get that fumble late in the ball game and we can win at 10-7 and defense scores the only dang touchdown. That's the kind of defense we want here. And that, you know, and we show that you can match up against a Big Ten opponent that they're huge up front offensive line. I think LJ Scott had 600-700 yard games last year. The kid had 15 rushes for 38 yards. You're showing that you can go against the best at doing what they do, and you can stone them. Now, let's take it to the next level. Let's get ourselves in great physical condition to where that we're the type of football team that our defense can take over and win a game for us.
We're talking with head coach Mike Chicks of the Bowling Green Falcons. Looking back a little bit at their 35-10 opening game loss in East Lansing against Michigan State. And now looking a little bit forward to this Saturday. It's the home opener at the Doit. You guys get FCS South Dakota into the building. First, talk to me about all the fun that gets to go on for an opening night at Doit Perry. It's definitely a fun kind of thing. It'll be an evening game, 5 o'clock the coverage time over on Talk Radio 100.7 with a 6 o'clock kickoff. First, before we get to the nitty gritty about this one, Coach, talk to me about the general joys of a home opener.
Right, first night game in a while, so there's a little buzz there. I think there's an excitement there, and I try to do a good job of getting integrated in the community and feel like invested a little bit. And I know that a lot of people are excited about coming out and supporting us. We've got a good product. We've got a great product. The Falcon Fanatics, where we're at and what we told the kids this morning is that if we can take care of Doit, if we can win the games that we have scheduled at Doit Perry this year, we will be in Detroit just because of the way they line up. You know what I mean? So I think that you're going to see these kids play not with a chip on their shoulder, but with a boulder and just chomping at the bits to show our fan base just how much work we put in the last 9 months.
Yeah, and it's definitely that kind of a game for that, a chance to show the fans some of the improvements that I know you guys are making. And you get an opponent that is kind of, well, in the grand scheme of college football, kind of the opposite of a Michigan State big program on the road. This is an FCS program coming in, and you guys are obviously at home at this one. Let's start by what you can tell us about South Dakota and what they're going to try to do to you.
Well, real similar to the North Dakota team that came in here last year. The key offensively is quarterback. Quarterback hurt us last week. We shut the run game down. You know, we gave up some plays in the passing game to Michigan State, but we didn't give up the explosive play. The quarterback hurt us with his legs, and the quarterback scrambles. Same type of guy this week. We've got to control that. We've got to limit his – we've got to contain him and limit his big plays outside of the pocket. And then defensively, you know, they're going to play coverage. They're going to be sound. They're going to be gap sound, and they're going to force you to drive the ball and look forward to you capitalizing on the mistakes that you make. So we've got to be sound. We've got to play disciplined football, real similar to the North Dakota team that came in here last year. You know, and really we had to play them down to the very last whistle. So we can't overlook these guys. I think our kids understand that. And really, at right now, Jim, where we are as a program, we can't overlook anybody. You know what I mean? So there's sure. Got to always be this edge. That's just who we are right now.
And that's taking care of what your job is to do, is to not overlook any opponent. On the same note, though, between a Michigan State on the road and a South Dakota at home, from your point of view as a coach, which one of those two types of games is truly a better game for a barometer of where your guys are?
Well, really, right now for us, this one's going to be a good idea of how far we've come, because North Dakota and South Dakota are pretty two similar teams. They're in the same conference. I think they played the three-point game last year. Heck, North Dakota, after our loss, won 12, 11 straight, some crazy number. So we struggled in that game last year, and we had to find a way to win late, Jim. So we'll see where we are and how we've grown. And from a pure talent standpoint, we're going to be the more talented team. Now, can we take advantage of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Good points on that one, Coach. Before I let you go, we're talking with head coach Mike Jinks of the Bowling Green Falcons. They're getting set for South Dakota to come into the Doit this Saturday night. 6 o'clock the kickoff time, 5 o'clock, by the way, the coverage time over at Talk Radio 100.7. Give me some keys to the game. What do you guys have to do to make sure it's a Falcon W?
Well, continue to play great defense, continue to swarm to the football, not give up the explosive pass plays, the cheap touchdowns, make sure we have great eye discipline at the safety position. And then offensively, really, we're going to have to establish a run, because I really think that they're going to try to play some coverage, keep two guys high. They do a great job schematically with different twists and stunts out of the defensive linemen. If we're able to pick those up and establish a run game, we should be okay.
Head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons, Mike Jinks, joining us. They're getting set for their game against South Dakota coming up on Saturday at the Doit. It's a 6 o'clock kickoff, and it's a 5 o'clock coverage time over here on Talk Radio 100.7. Coach, we always appreciate the time, always appreciate the insight. Hopefully, when we reconvene next week, we're talking this time about a Falcons W.
Let's get it.
Thanks so much, Coach. Head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons, Mike Jinks, taking some time here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. And that's going to put a wrap on this Wednesday edition here of The Extravaganza. Thanks so much for tuning in for all the best sports talk here in town. Stick around, though. Lots more still to go on this Wednesday afternoon evening. Drive Time with Mike Miller coming at you next. And then at 6 o'clock, it'll be the Buckeye Roundtable for a couple of hours from 6 to 8, recapping the win last week against Indiana. Looking forward to a top 5 showdown as the Oklahoma Sooners, not under Bob Stoops, by the by, coming in to the Horseshoe on Saturday. So we'll have all that later this evening for you, and then we'll reconvene and talk about all things sports. We set it up for the extravaganza tomorrow, everybody, at 3. We'll talk to you then.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.